The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Childhood. It's often painted as a time of joy, simplicity, and innocence. A sacred period that should be free from the world's darker realities. Yet there are times when this very innocence becomes the mask for something deeply sinister. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. Today's episode is about one such case, a series of chilling events that would not only shock the community, but also capture the attention of an entire nation. This is the case of Jesse Pomeroy, America's youngest serial killer. Born in 1859, in Charlestown, Massachusetts, Jesse Harding Pomeroy was the second child in a seemingly ordinary family. But behind his innocent facade lurked a darkness that would soon manifest in horrifying ways. There's some disagreement about Jesse Pomeroy's early life. Some historians believe his father, Thomas Pomeroy, a Civil War veteran and worker at the Charlestown Naval Yard, was abusive towards him and would often whip him with a horsewhip and make him strip naked. But there are also some people who say that Jesse and his older brother Charles experienced normal childhoods. This makes it difficult to really identify where things went wrong in Jesse's life. Either way, his odd behavior was obvious from early on. When Jesse was just 5 years old, a neighbor accused him of killing a cat and throwing it into the river. And if you're a fan of true crime, like I am, you know that torturing and killing animals is a sign. Jeffrey Dahmer, Albert DeSalvio, and Carol Edward Cole were all known to torture animals at a young age and later escalated to murders. Even one of his teachers described him as peculiar and stubborn, not bad, but hard to understand. To add to that, Jesse had a birth defect that covered his eye in a thick white film, so he was often bullied by his schoolmates. With that, Jesse soon became a loner who enjoyed reading dramatic stories about life on the frontier. All these factors combined set the stage for Jesse in a way no one could have ever suspected. In 1872, in the neighborhood of Charlestown in Chelsea, Massachusetts, local children started to report terrifying encounters with someone who, to their disbelief, was just a child himself. Apparently, a 13-year-old Jesse Pomeroy would lure them to secluded spots with promises of sweets or money. Now, since Jesse was almost the same age as them, the children trusted him instinctively, not knowing that this trust would be betrayed in the most horrific ways. At that young age, Jesse would strip and bind his victims before subjecting them to brutal beatings with his fists and a belt. As time passed, these acts escalated. He began torturing them with knives or pins in the face or genitals. And then it went into outright sexual violence. During the initial stages, his victims were left alive, but the physical and emotional scars left some of them permanently disfigured. His first known victim was 7-year-old Tracy Hayden, who was beaten and left on Powderhorn Hill on February 21st. A few months later, on May 20th, 8-year-old Robert Mayer suffered a similar fate, being found beaten in an abandoned outhouse in Chelsea. The violence continued when Johnny Bausch, another young boy, was discovered on July 22nd, tied up and beaten in a similar setting on Powderhorn Hill. As the attacks went on, the public's concern grew, especially after the Boston Globe labeled this person as the fiendish boy. Think about that. You have all these terrible attacks happening on kids, and the phrase used to describe this perpetrator is something you'd call a young boy who filled up a car with popcorn for a prank. This was far beyond normal misbehavior or youthful indiscretions. With this, the Boston Globe also featured headlines such as "The Boy Torturer" and "The Red Devil" to describe Jesse. Based on this, Ruth Pomeroy, Jesse's mother, along with many others in Charlestown, began to see how these descriptions matched Jesse. In an effort to silence the rumors and stop Jesse's violent behavior, she quietly relocated the family to South Boston. But regrettably, this move did not achieve what she had hoped. Jesse's next victim was George Pratt, a 7-year-old found injured by a local fisherman in South Boston on August 17th. Not long after, on September 11th, Joseph Kennedy, another 7-year-old, was lured to a vacant boathouse, beaten, and cut with a pocket knife. The youngest of his victims, 4-year-old Robert Gould, was found on September 17th, tied to a telegraph post near the railway tracks, also beaten and slashed. All of his victims were younger than him, and that meant he was not going to stop anytime soon. It also meant his victims would get older as he got older. He felt no remorse, or so it appeared, and it was enough to cause panic. The local community was in an uproar, and the pressure was mounting on the authorities to put a stop to these acts. But Jesse was careful. Well, more than that, no one suspected a teenage boy to be behind these horrible attacks. But then Jesse's own behavior became his downfall. After one particular attack where he had beaten and stabbed Joseph Kennedy near a police station, Jesse made the brave, or rather stupid, decision to walk past the station. Apparently, he peeked inside the window to catch a glimpse of what was going on. And in that moment, Joseph recognized him and pointed him out to the officers. And that was it. Jesse was arrested on the spot. Now, as anyone would, he initially denied any involvement in the attacks. But when he was eventually brought in front of his victims, every one of them identified him as their attacker. The evidence was overwhelming, and the testimonies of his victims added to it, leading to Jesse eventually confessing to his crimes. Jesse was tried and sentenced to reform school until he was 18, based on his confessions and the severe nature of his actions. With that, the community of Boston, which had been held in the grip of fear, breathed a collective sigh of relief. They expected the worst was behind them. They could not be more wrong. Somehow, Jesse's mother managed to get him released on parole within months of this sentencing. And that was a grave mistake. The idea behind the reform program was to give him time to reflect on his actions and think about the consequences. When that opportunity was taken away, and when he was indirectly told by his mother she would save him from absolutely every problem, he returned to his old ways. Only this time, he went too far. Just a month after Jesse Pomeroy was released on parole, 10-year-old Katie Curran went missing. She was last seen near the dress shop operated by Jesse's mother, where Jesse also worked. And that made the police suspicious. After all, the situation was very similar to the crimes he had committed. So the police questioned him and searched the shop, but they found no evidence linking him to Katie's disappearance. Now, that did not mean he was innocent. 5 weeks later, the body of another kid, 4-year-old Horace Millen, was found on a beach, nearly decapitated. And that was not the only disturbing thing about this victim. His body was severely mutilated, with his genitals almost cut off. There were stab wounds shaped like X's across his body, and it had also been burned. Near the body were boot prints, matching those of Jesse Pomeroy. It was clear by this point that Jesse was in an extremely disturbed state of mind. The initial crimes had started with beatings, but to murder a child in that manner meant that regardless of his age, severe measures were needed.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
The police questioned him again, and this time they noticed scratches on his skin and blood on his clothes. It appeared that Horace Millen had tried to defend himself with everything he had. So, the evidence was against Jesse this time as well. He was arrested on April 24th, 1874, after which he soon confessed to the murder, claiming, "I suppose I did." After that, he went on to confess to the murder of 27 others. Now, although this number was never confirmed, Horace Millen was not his only murder victim. When Jesse's mother sold her shop for much-needed cash following his arrest, the situation worsened for the family. The new owners found the decomposing body of Katie Curran in the basement of the shop, leading to yet another confession from Jesse. His trial began on December 9th, 1874, just after his 15th birthday, and concluded the very next day. The difficult thing here was to determine a proper sentence for him, considering the nature of his crime, as well as his young age. Now, although the jury dismissed the defense's claim that Jesse was insane, they wanted to show some leniency because he was only 15. The judge, though, didn't agree that Jesse deserved the kindness, and he gave him a death sentence, which he felt was justice for the victims' families. But the governor's office refused to enforce this decision because he was only a child. Eventually, after 2 years and 3 votes, Jesse's sentence was changed to life in solitary confinement, and he was imprisoned in Massachusetts State Prison on September 7th, 1876. But the story doesn't end there. Over the next 50 years, Jesse Pomeroy attempted to escape from prison multiple times. he once nearly caused an explosion by tampering with the gas pipes in his cell. The only reason it didn't work was because Jesse ended up incapacitated by the blast himself. Interestingly, that was not all he did. During his time in prison, he learned several languages, wrote poetry, and according to some accounts, he dabbled in the stock market. Later in 1929, Jesse was moved to the state prison farm in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, to live out his final years. He died of a heart attack on September 29, 1932, just before his 73rd birthday, marking the end of a complex chapter in the history of America. By the time of his death, he had spent almost 59 years as the ward of state, and this was the longest that America had kept someone behind bars up to that time. Now, even though he is known as the youngest serial killer in the history of America, the term serial killer was coined years after he died. According to the term, a serial killer is typically a person who murders three or more people. Jesse's pattern of selecting and attacking victims showed early signs of acts later associated with serial killers like Dahmer and Bundy. His case is the prime example of how criminal tendencies can be evident from early on. And that is our window for intervention, to try and avoid the possibility of yet another serial killer in this world. If Ruth Pomeroy had allowed Jesse to complete his sentence the first time, it might have made a difference. But at this point, all we can do is speculate. And that wraps up today's episode. The case of Jesse Pomeroy poses some interesting questions about whether killers are born or made. And if they're born that way, are interventions and reform programs enough to change that? Thank you for listening to Hometown History, and be sure to follow along for more stories from the past.